everybody. Welcome to another Webtoon Wednesday. I have a couple of comic veterans on with me today to talk about their title, Outrage. So I would like to welcome Riley Brown and Fabian Anicieza to the show. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you for pronouncing my name perfectly. It's so rare I hear it that way.
First try. Well, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Both been around for a little while. A couple of legendary creators, as I said. So here to talk about your webtoon strip, Outrage, which I completely binged when I heard you guys were coming on. I'm like, oh, I told Riley at New York Comic Con I was going to check it out. I haven't done it. I went, I blew through it in one sitting because it was just so good. So we're going to get to Outrage in a minute, but I always like to ask people when they come on for the first time kind of about their history with comics. You know, did you grow up reading them? Did you come to them later? We'll start with you, Riley. What's your secret origin?
I always loved drawing and stuff when I was a kid. I don't think I really read many comics other than the little He-Man mini comics that came with the action figures, and newspaper strips. You know, I loved Calvin and Hobbes and Peanuts and stuff when I was a kid. I didn't really read many comic books, and it's because I always really wanted a Spider-Man comic, but at the time that I think I was old enough to get into them, he was wearing the black costume, and that confused me because I thought it was a different Spider-Man than the one that I saw in the cartoons that I wanted to read about. So I never got into Spider-Man until I was about 11 years old. And I was at a friend's party, and he had comic books as party favors. And, you know, I read it, and I was just like, that's it. That, you know, because like I said, I always liked drawing. And I saw what was in these comics. So I was like, yep, that's awesome. That's what I want to do.
How about you, Fabian?
Well, besides the fact Riley's making me feel so old, just because when he wasn't reading his Spider-Man comics because of the black costume, I think I was already working at Marvel, for God's sake.
Yeah, I wasn't going to tell you what my first X-Men comic book stories were.
Because I don't even want to know. It's probably like after me.
No. It wasn't after you.
I became familiar with comic book format material when I was really little, like 4 years old in Argentina, 3 years old. I don't remember. I wasn't reading them, obviously, but my brother would get a magazine in Argentina called Antiojito y Antifaz. They were just like brothers or friends who caused all kinds of little mayhem. It was a cartoony style. And I definitely remember those characters. And then when we moved to the United States in 1966, I was 4 and a half, and one of the first things we recognized on the local newsstand were Superman and Batman, because they were airing as TV shows in Argentina before we came here. So my brother asked my parents if we can get a couple, and that's how we started reading comics, and that was 1966. I was reading them by the time I was 5 or 6, and they really helped me learn how to read and write English, I believe, a lot faster. I don't remember first grade at all to this day, pretty much, because I think that was the language transition for me. But by the time, by 1967, we were already getting Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Captain America. I started reading Avengers in 1968 and kept reading it continuously for, until I was working at Marvel and was able to get it for free. So they've been a part of my life pretty much my entire life. And I always wanted to write comics since I was a kid. But I understood that I needed to get a job in publishing, preferably to enable me to have an opportunity to write somewhere, somehow. And I got pretty lucky by getting a job at Marvel Comics, which is how I was able to start selling my writing, because I was already working on staff on the inside of the company.
Now, Fabian, do you remember how old you were when you made that decision that I'm going to, this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, I think I was around 10 or so. I wanted to be a writer since I was around 10 years old. I drew too, and I drew a lot, and I drew really well by the standards of the average kid. But as soon as I got old enough to realize I drew well, but not well enough to be a professional artist, I was never going to make that leap. But I always drew. So I started drawing my own stories, and that was around 14 or so where I really realized that in drawing the stories, what I was really doing is learning how to write, flexing all my writing muscles in terms of comic book writing. But I wrote 200, 300 page loose leaf paper novels when I was like, you know, a freshman in high school and a sophomore in high school. I wrote one over the summer that was like 400 loose leaf pages long, and I submitted it into my English class my sophomore year, and as an assignment I was able to sneak in and wow. Handed it as an assignment. So I've been writing since I was, you know, anywhere from 10 to 12, 13 years old, in a pretty serious manner. Never with the illusion that I'd become a writer, because I even understood at a very young age that it's a very, very hard field to make a living in. Mm-hmm. And I had no illusions. That's why I went to college, to try to get a job in a field that would help me try to write, which was public relations and advertising. And ironically and really luckily, I became Marvel's advertising manager. So I merged what my college major was with where I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. And that was in 1985.
Yeah, foot in the door. What about you, Riley? Was there a moment where you said, okay, yeah, this is what I want to do?
It was pretty much, like I said, when I was 10 years old, because I always wanted to be an artist, even before I got into comics, because I love drawing and stuff. But my problem was, like, I remember, you know, when I was in first grade, people always ask you, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I always said I wanted to be an artist, but I always felt kind of like I was lying, because as much as I love drawing, I'd go to art museums and I just thought that the stuff there was so boring. It was just either landscapes or, modern art, which, you know, were just random shapes and stuff. And I just wasn't very excited by it. And, what I liked were cartoons. Like, I wanted to draw the robots and the aliens and the cool stuff like that. But I knew that animation had so many people working on it. And I was like, you know, with my luck, my job would be to animate doors opening and closing. I don't want to do that. And someone's got to animate that stuff. I don't know. And it would have to be me, because I'd be the sucker that would take that job.
How sad would you be at the end of every workday if all you'd had to do all day long is draw doors opening and closing?
Newspaper strips, I just didn't think, like, I really loved them, but I didn't think I could be funny that, like, on that consistent abate. You know, I didn't think I was very funny, and, you know, it's kind of ironic because I mostly do, you know, humor strips or strips that have or comics that have a humor aspect to them these days. So I really wanted to do art. I just didn't know what it was until I first saw some Marvel stuff and I looked at the credits and was like, oh, there's one guy drawing it. Someone else was writing it, and, you know, it's kind of spread out among, like, what, five people or something. And I was like, oh, so that means the same guy who draws the doors opening and closing also gets to draw the cool robots and mutants and stuff. So the second I saw that, I was like, that's what I want to do. Awesome. So it really was like, you know, that moment in fifth grade at that birthday party that I was like, oh, I finally figured it out.
Awesome. And I want to give you a chance to shout out some of your previous work. In fact, there's one character you both have worked on quite a bit that you have in common. But any previous work that you want to shout out to the listeners, if they're not familiar, that they can go out and pick up and see some of your work you've done before?
I worked on a lot of Deadpool. I think that was my first real gig at Marvel with Fabian. And that one certainly has some funny moments to it. And I worked on Incredible Hercules with Greg Pak and Fred Benlente, which is one of the funniest books that Marvel's put out in the past. I don't know. I think it's been 10 years since it came out, but that was such a brilliant book. Then I worked on Slapstick. I worked on a lot of Deadpool stuff, some Spider-Man. I don't know. But for some reason, I keep getting attached to books with a humorous angle to them. or at least with wisecracking characters. You know?
Yeah, for sure. That's why the commission I have from you in my sketchbook is Deadpool with a giant knife, Bowie knife sticking out of his forehead. Still one of my favorites.
That's kind of my convention special. If someone asks me to draw a Deadpool, I just put a knife or a ninja star or a fork or something in his head. And
it's perfect.
And you're off to the races.
Yeah, it's good for a laugh. Yeah.
What about you, Fabian?
For me, I've been doing this for 30 freaking years now, so there's a lot of mileage under the belt, but, I would strongly recommend New Warriors, Thunderbolts, and the work I did on Robin and Red Robin at DC. I think that's some of the strongest material I've done, in a career that, you know, covers a lot of material. But I'm also well aware that quite a lot of that material is utter dreck and crap. So, you know, you take the good with the bad. Even if there's a lot more bad than good, you just point to the good stuff. You don't point to any of the bad stuff.
Yeah, but I have to imagine that Deadpool is the book that you or the character you asked.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. You know, Cable and Deadpool is. I totally forgot. Cable and Deadpool is like the.
Yeah, wait a minute. What are you not pointing to here?
It slipped my train of thought as I was jumping from Thunder. I was trying to go chronologically, and then I just jumped straight from Thunderbolts to Red Robin stuff. Cable and Deadpool remains one of my favorite experiences writing in comics, because it was pretty much 50 issues of whatever the hell I wanted to do with no one paying any attention at all to us.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of fun.
It's totally classic, and I have to think that that's probably the series you get asked to sign the most. Is that...
No, X-Men. I by far get outside of Deadpool comics, whether I wrote them or not, you know, everyone brings up Deadpool comics, but it's usually X-Men stuff because you got to take into account that when I was writing X-Men, those books were selling anywhere from 600 to 750,000 copies on average a month. That's a lot of copies that were going out there. And contrary to what the fallacy belief is, that was not five people each buying 125,000 copies. It was a lot of people reading. So I get a lot of X-Men stuff and X-Force, but honestly, I outside of the Deadpool comics, I think X-Men is the one I tend to sign the most at conventions.
Well, that's the classic stuff too. So, I know I said I have them all.
I appreciate it. What you call classic, I call Tuesday, okay?
Well, let's change gears here a little bit and talk about your webtoon title, Outrage. Fabian, why don't you give us give our listeners an idea of what Outrage is kind of all about?
Well, Outrage started with a pretty simple idea, and I'm not a great idea man, but it was a pretty obvious one. I read something someone said online, and I thought, man, I wish I could reach through the computer and smack the crap out of that idiot. And then I just stopped for a second and said, hey, wait a minute. What if I could reach through the computer and smack the crap out of that idiot? And I just started percolating that really loosely. I had the name Outrage almost immediately. And I mentioned it to Riley, and over the course of a couple of years before we really, really had an opportunity to say, yeah, this is a possible project we can do together, and there's a place that wants to do it with us. That took a couple of years to even get to that point because Riley was busy and I was lazy. So we could never seem to connect between his busyness and my laziness. And the idea was, because of the way the world is today, it would be pretty cathartic to have a character that is very visceral about his reactions to what he sees on the internet. So it just became, at first it was just a manifestation of frustration and anger. But it really very quickly then became a story about why we are being this way. And I think that's part of the interesting aspect of the whole project for me is going from the initial one-off smackdowns and rudeness and crudeness and start exploring a little bit more about, how people interact on the internet and through social media and why we're using this screen as a proxy for all of the garbage we have inside ourselves. So that's kind of how the story itself evolves over the course of 26 chapters.
Yeah. When you first told me the concept, I think we were having lunch because we were working on Deadpool and Cable at the time, and you mentioned the outrage concept, and I just remember like leaving that meeting thinking, man, like that's such a cool idea. Whatever artist he asked to work with him, that's a pretty lucky guy. And then I was like, wait, was he asking me? Was that me? Who's got to draw this thing? And then the next time, so then I was like thinking about it a lot. And then the next time we saw each other, you brought it up again, and I was like, okay, well, if we do it, he's got to look like this. And I took out a pencil and started drawing it. And then you said, well, now that you're drawing it, that means we're working on it. And then, you know,
and that was it. Yeah.
That was it.
Very few artists want to work with me twice. So I had to, once I had him snagged, I knew I had to keep him before he came to his senses.
It would be the third time we worked together. So I guess
yeah, I'm okay.
So really,
I know you're right, because that Cable and the second book was like almost 10 years removed from the first run, wasn't it? Close to it,
something like that. It was a while after.
So really, from the start, then from the initial idea that Fabian had, right? You were really involved with not just kind of the visual design, but really the whole concept and origin. It was really a true collaborative process between the two of you forming the story you were going to tell, right?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Okay.
No, I was going to say we are co-creators on the property. We own it jointly and equally. It is both of us.
Yeah, it's really like all the story ideas and a lot of it just came from us, you know, having lunch and having a few drinks and just saying whatever dumb things came to mind and thinking like, oh yeah, man, like we've got to fit that in there somewhere. And then I knew about Webtoon because my studio mate, Dean Haspiel, had been working on his book Red Hook with them for a while at that point. And I think it was at New York Comic Con, he introduced me to the Webtoon guys. And I was like, actually, I've got this comic book concept that I think would be perfect for a web comic format. And then I, you know, mentioned it to Fabian. And I think, isn't that how it came about, Fabian? Like, wasn't, they, or the were we actually us, gunning for them?
You sent them to me, didn't you?
At
New York Comic Con, because we were just a couple rows apart, and he talked to me right after he had talked to you, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like Comic Con 2016, I think.
It was 2 years ago, whichever.
And then that's when we realized that we had a place we could pitch it to. I had talked to Mike Martz at Aftershock about the project. Before, you know, right as Aftershock was just starting, they hadn't published anything yet. And Mike liked the idea, but he didn't think that it fit tonally with a lot of the stuff that they were trying to do. And having seen a lot of what they're doing, I think I agree with them. It didn't fit tonally with what they're doing. Ours is a lot more fun.
I think it kind of, yeah. I mean, it would have fit with, what's the animal one with the animals eating people? Animosity, yeah. I don't know, it fits in there. There's some kind of commentary going in there and violence and goofiness. But but whatever. We, you know, Webtoon is a really great home
Webtoon
for it.
Was the right home for us at the time.
Yeah. I think with the concept being so much about the internet and social media, I think a webcomic is really the ideal way to tell a story like this.
Yeah, the way that the kind of the technology aspect of it ties in so well, was there any concern on either the part of Webtoon or yourselves that maybe you were going to go too political? Because it right from the start, it's so grounded into kind of the divisiveness of today, you know?
I don't think they ever expressed a concern about any kind of political presentations. They were worried about language, violence and nudity and anything like that. We told them we'd be doing a PG-13 comic, and it is a PG-13 comic. There's nothing in it that you can't see in a PG-13 rated movie. Even to the point where in a PG-13 movie, I'd be allowed one F-bomb in my 26 chapters, and we're not going to even try that. We're not going to say that. I don't, you know, there's no nudity in it. There's no gore in it.
No. So there isn't language and stuff that it couldn't be a G-rated thing either.
Yeah, no, and it's not. Nor would I have wanted it to be that. Because I don't think the property lends itself to that at all without it really needing to change drastically tonally. I mean, could Outrage be a G-rated property or a PG-rated property? Yeah, of course it could. It could be a, you know, a kid's animated cartoon. It'd just be a lot sillier, and the subject matter would be toned down tremendously.
Right, it would probably just be more specifically about bullying or something like that than about...
Yeah. So no real issues, no real concerns that they expressed to us about the subject matter that we were presenting.
If anything, there was a couple of times Tom Akel, who was our editor when we first started, there was a couple of times where I felt like he was pushing us, at least me, I don't know, when we were talking, to be even more political, because he was like, you know, if you did this thing, like, you would get a lot of clicks, like a lot of people would you know, they would just get us a lot of attention. We're like, that's not really what the story is about, Tom.
Yeah, it's an interesting, it really is a fascinating discussion, though. Like, we could have done a lot more, quite honestly. Riley reined me in several times very smartly. We could have done a lot more, and it would have been for the wrong reasons, because it would have been blatantly just trying to get attention, which is antithetical to what the actual story is about. You know, we would be playing the game that we're decrying in our story if we did that. You know, so I mean, the poop in the Oval Office was originally going to be an entire chapter where Outrage and Donald Trump are trying to have a conversation, which may have been funny in and of itself, but the truth of the matter is that the poop is a million times better, you know?
Yeah, well, that scene particularly, we went back and forth on a lot, with like making up our minds and then changing them a week later several times. Because at first he was going to fight the president, and then he was going to, you know, fight a bunch of Secret Service agents, and like there's all this stuff. Yeah. But, you know, I think that where we ended up, because eventually, I don't know, at least for me, if you get into, there's a line where if you cross it, it becomes, it's not about internet trolling anymore, and it's like, you know, about more about national security and even military action, because when you're dealing with the politicians, like those are the heads of state. So if you attack the president directly, then, you know, that's, it changes what the story's about.
Yeah, yep. I mean, it was the right call and the right way to do it, because it still did exactly what the story needed. It kicked off, you know, an investigation of what this creature is, but it did it in a way that wasn't as heavy-handed as it originally had been. But, you know, I'm still going to get Trump in there. really brief cameo at the very end. You'll see.
Well, like I'm saying, if you cross that line and you start, you know, playing the same game that you're trying to decry, like you said, then it becomes self-serving in a way. So you've got to, I think it's important. I mean, I kind of laugh at the people that say, oh, you know, I don't want politics in my comics. I'm like, well, there's always been from the golden age, from Superman fighting slumlords, it's always been there, because it's a reaction and a part of our society. It's a part of who we are. Like, we're political.
Even before that, you had political cartoons. Yeah, you had exactly. Thomas Nast and all those guys. Politics and comics have been, you know, they've been together for a very long time.
Since the beginning.
And we're just, and it's not, and ours isn't even a political cartoon specifically. It just incorporates politics because it's about modern society, and politics is such a big part of modern society and such a big part of the internet and internet bullying and stuff like that. So it would have been dishonest, I feel, if we ignored that side of things.
Yeah, and I think that the word politics is bandied about way too much nowadays. I think that it's less about politics, which ultimately boils down to a preference of one party over another. And our story is really about how people are. And for good or bad, for left or right,
Yeah, we definitely have characters
that to people that outrage is an equal opportunity offender. He hates all human beings.
Yeah,
And if he's able to attack more human beings on one side than possibly the other, maybe it's because one side is doing more of this kind of stuff online that deserves to be called out. That's all. But I think that we showed over the course of 26 chapters, we'll have shown that he tries very, very hard to be fair in his hatred and his superiority to the human race.
But also, we have a lot of characters. Like, Fabian, you're doing a great job of, like, keeping all the characters honest in their own, you know, what we see of their political views and stuff. And not making one guy, like, a total straw man and then another guy, like, the perfect bastion of a different type of political philosophy. It's like the characters are just characters and they're true to themselves. And there's a lot of times where I've come to a certain panel where I'll say, are we really doing that? And I'm like, no, we're not doing it. That character is. And that's the right thing for that character to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And you get there really quickly. I mean, when you're writing the characters, you get there really quickly. And I honestly felt by like chapters 6 through 8 is when I was like, all right, this is what this character is going to do or say or think. And it's totally natural, whether I believe it or, you know, one way or the other. The other aspect of it, though, that you got to understand is that we revealed in the course of the story, spoiler alert, plug your ears if you're listening, that outrage is an amalgam of multiple people, which means it is the byproduct of multiple points of view. And as a result, it's really hard to say that he is one thing or another. He is the super ego of a variety of different personality types. And I think that plays itself through, especially now in the final chapters where we're really kind of getting into that nitty gritty of defining that, you know?
Yeah. And when that was something personally, I really was adamant that I didn't want this comic to just be propaganda. I wanted it like to show everyone's point of view and to just kind of say, God, you guys are all such idiots. If anybody thought that they were going to come into this and not, you know, get poked fun of in some way, then I wanted to make sure that I corrected that.
Yeah, and I remember what big argument we had. I wanted Outrage to be punching Hitler on our first cover, and Riley said, no way. There's no way we're going to punch Hitler. That's propaganda. There's no politics in comics.
And there are no covers in webtoons. So.
Oh, yeah. That's when I went, oh, yeah. I don't know this digital stuff so good.
Well, what's funny is, you know, Fabian said it right at the beginning. Who of us hasn't been, you know, on social media, on the internet, and wanted to reach to the screen and slap somebody who's just completely lost the plot, right? So
right.
There is such a, you know, beyond the political stuff, there is just such a social commentary aspect to it. And even us, even things that we've probably put out there, you know, and I try to be as open-minded as I can. I'm sure there's even things I've posted where somebody wanted to reach through and smack me. So, you know, I'm old enough to remember, you know, long before there was, the internet and it being so widespread, something we use every day. So this story is so, you know, focused on that and it's in the DNA of the story so much. So let me ask you, put you on the spot. The ubiquitous of the internet, is it a net gain for society or a net loss? What do you think?
Fabian, you want to take this one?
I think currently it is a net loss. I can't tell you, I can't predict what it will be in another 10 or 15 years, but I think right now it's a net loss because never in the history of human civilization have we had access to so much information and done so little good with it. So I think that the unfortunate thing of the internet is that it has really, really ended up showcasing just how kind of sad and feeble the human race really is.
I personally don't feel like it showcases how sad the human race is, but it gives the human race an opportunity to be sad. Like, I think it's social media in particular, I feel like is some kind of fake interaction where you're not interacting with the whole person the way you would in real life. And if you had these conversations with people in real life, not sure, sometimes you might get angry and storm out, but you're not going to have these debates that you do for days and like hours or days with multiple people chiming in that you don't even know. Like it, like, and it's all posturing. Like there, it's all like this kind of phony posturing and not with no empathy and no actually looking someone in the eye and understanding where they're coming from. And so it's kind of like, I don't know. It's just weird. Like there's so many great things that the internet that it can be used for and that it is used for and that's out there for it, for people to see and make use of. But then people just take the opportunity to be assholes, either just for the sake of it or to show how much better they are than everyone or like whatever, for whatever reason. And it's just so obnoxious. And it, there's no, I don't know. There's, it's just not a healthy interaction.
I've always been a cynical optimist, but since the age of the internet, I am far more cynic than I am optimist. And I've always been an optimist, and I've always, you know, espoused positive aspirational stuff in my work. But it just gets harder and harder and harder nowadays. The odd thing is that it's gotten harder faster. Like everything gets exacerbated and everything's moving at 60 miles an hour or 80 miles an hour or whatever in comparison to what it used to. So you know, things get compressed so quickly in these cycles nowadays that we lose our sense of pace, our sense of patience, and everything just gets madder faster.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that are specifically trying to get mad. Like, they're looking for excuses to get upset about things. And then there's other people who are purposefully trying to antagonize people. So it really is just, you know, the kind of a unfortunate thing. And they, you know, they act like it's just for fun. Oh, it's just for the lols or whatever. But they actually do get mad about it and then do carry a chip on their shoulder about it for a long time. So it's really not. It's just not healthy. Like, that's all. That's the only way I can look at it, is no matter what, how you look at it, it's just not a healthy way to interact with other people.
Yeah. So you've come along to my side then.
You interact with people more on, you know, I barely post on Twitter or anything at all.
I interact more on social media, but I just feel like I 100% react. It's completely selfishly to my own interest, to my own gain. I rarely get involved in stupidity online because it bores me, you know?
Well, see, I can't, because I, like, if I say something, if I put out some opinion and then get some, you know, like flack for whatever, like, I can't just let it, like, I have to, I'm the guy that has to argue till, like, it's gone, right? Like, all night I'm like, no, look at this, like let me explain, you know. And so I have to just not do it, because I don't need to do it. I'm not somebody who feels like I need to put those opinions and stuff out there, but if I do, I need to stick with it till the end.
Yeah, until your gums are bleeding, you're not gonna stop.
Right. And that's not conductive to a business where I have deadlines.
True.
Yeah. But, you know, from all the comments on Outrage, what we certainly understand is that they hear Ryan Reynolds' voice when they read it. Really? Sorry, that's just me making fun of our comments. I don't want to make fun of our readers, but that's me making fun of our readers.
At least once, if not 20 times per episode, somebody's like, am I the only one who hears Ryan Reynolds' voice?
No, you're just the only one who posted on it for the 50th time this episode. I wanted to talk about wanting to reach to the computer and smack someone. I want to smack him with Ryan Reynolds' voice.
I think that's them just trolling you.
I really should. I should email Ryan Reynolds and see if I can get him to voice record something.
Oh, that would be brilliant. So that
I can have him shout at the Outrage readers.
That would be hilarious. How has the reception to the title been?
Been great, from what I can tell. It's the reviews have all been, or the comments have all been really positive. We're getting really good like ratings and stuff on the, at least on the website. I haven't heard anything bad about it, so that that might just be me blocking things from my consciousness, but
the response, I think it's been very positive. the response on the boards after the chapter airs has been universally positive. We're at a 9.4 rating from readers so far. We have over 330,000 likes on the chapters that have appeared so far, and we have the largest viewership of any of the new North American launches that they released in the fall. Although they don't like to talk about numbers, and we're not supposed to talk about numbers, we have the most successful launch out of all of them. So I think it's done pretty well. More people have read Outrage than any comic I've written in 15 years, for Marvel or for DC.
Yeah, me too. And 15 years has been the entirety of my career, so I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, so we're satisfied. I think it could be better. I think it could be bigger. But overall, I think we're both pretty satisfied with how it's gone.
Well, I think new kind of traditional comic readers, you know, people who followed things in print, they're just a lot of them are just now discovering Webtoon. I'm finding since I started doing the Webtoon Wednesday, I've had a lot of people say, "Hey, I didn't even know Webtoon existed. There's so much great stuff there." So I think it's only trending upwards.
Yeah, we think that one thing that Webtoon hasn't done, which has dissatisfied us, and this is just conversation. This isn't anger or anything like that. It's what's dissatisfied us is that they don't make much of a publicity or promotional effort to the existing comic book audience. So they don't try to get comic book websites like Bleeding Cool or Comic Book Resources or The Beat or any of those, to cover the content that's on their site. The reason is because the vast majority of their subscribers are not North American comic book, interested people. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to start bringing in people like me and Riley, or bringing in a Warren Ellis and a Colleen Duran, it really behooves you to make the audience that knows of those people from the North American comic book market, make them aware that this product is available for them to read, and go figure, it's free. Right. They rely way too much on us using our social media efforts to try to draw attention. But, I got 11,000 or almost 11,000 followers on Twitter. That's a drop in the bucket, in comparison to the amount of people who've read comics that I've written. So that's been a frustration that they rely a little too heavily within their own subscriber base on their platform. And they haven't done enough to get people from outside the platform to come visit it.
Which is kind of the point of bringing guys like us on
those websites to cover us. They kind of don't want to. They don't have an interest in covering the digital comic space. I think part of the reason is because they don't want to alienate the direct market distribution system. They don't want to alienate comic book retailers or anything like that by promoting vibrant new digital content. Because it does cut out the middlemen, being the distributors and the comic shops, and as a result, the people I've talked to trying to get articles or trying to get attention on Outrage haven't really shown an inclination to do that. And believe me, I'll remember that next time they expect me to pay for the drinks at a convention. That's all.
but that's not just. I mean, that's the way the industry is altogether. It's really the publicity side of the comics industry I've long found very frustrating. Are there comics news places that don't just focus on Marvel and DC and maybe Image? Like, are there places that you guys know about at all that focus on web comics and a few places focus on manga, I know, but not a few, a whole lot of places just focus on manga.
No.
But how about like webcomics? Is there any internet hub for webcomic news or anything like that?
No, not that I know of. And in fact, it's a struggle. You look at 15 years ago, there was more kind of objective coverage of comics on the internet. Now, just about any place you find, it's not necessarily objective coverage. It's more cheerleading. And it's the majority
better say something nice about our new, you know, superhero comic, because when the movie comes out, if you want an exclusive.
Exactly. And the TV and movie stuff vastly, you know, the amount vastly outnumbers any comic book coverage, any print, you know, traditional. And it's from their perspective, you know, a lot of these sites have been bought up by, you know, bigger companies, and it's all about the clicks and the, you know, advertising revenue, and movies and TV stuff, good or bad, gets more clicks. It gets more traffic. So they're going to go where the money is, unfortunately.
Well, you just depressed the hell out of us.
Yeah. Hey, guys.
We got our Webtoon Wednesdays here, that's a start, right?
I'm doing
that. Actually, it is a start. That's the kind of thing that gets the ball rolling. When people hear it, they want to hear more of it. I mean, there's a lot of really talented people producing work on that platform. You know,
it deserves
attention outside of just the platform. You know, even though Webtoon is so large and has so many readers there, it still deserves more attention from the traditional venues, you know, that we've been catering to for years, you know?
But I've got this theory that I've been working on, that I think there's going to be another, like, pretty soon in the next couple of years. If it's not already happening right now, I don't know. I think we're going to see another big webcomic boom this time, like last time there was a big webcomic boom was around 2000. And that was kind of due to the newspaper strip market, kind of like, you know, at the time newspaper sales were just starting to kind of tank. And, so newspaper strips weren't seen as, at least, you know, from the young creator's point of view, it wasn't seen as lucrative a goal as it used to be. And also it just seemed like it was very hard to get into that type of thing because, you know, even when Charles Schulz died, they were still running Peanuts. And even though Kathy and, Garfield weren't very funny, newspapers were still running that strip because instead of making room for something new, just because, you know, how could you have a newspaper without Garfield? And so I think, a lot of people that wanted to do that type of comics, such as the Penny Arcade guys and PvP and stuff like that, they turned to the internet and found a lot of success there. And I think that the same type of thing is going to start happening soon with people that want to do more action adventure type of things that normally might be a Marvel or DC or Image type of thing, because as you're seeing comic book sales going down, and it's becoming harder for people to find their way into those, at least perceived as being harder for people to find their way into those markets with, you know, the companies reaching out to more overseas artists and stuff like that. And then at the same time, you see a lot of people doing very well on Patreon and on Instagram and places like that to show off exactly the type of art that you would normally expect to see in a Marvel or DC comic. I think a lot of people are going to start saying, like, that's the business model, is to make money from Instagram and Patreon and Kickstarter, and just not even go through Marvel or DC, because that's the way that they're going to want to, you know, that's the way that their fans are going to know how to reach them. And I think Webtoon is going to be a big part of that, or if they're not already, because, you know, they're there and their readership is huge. It's, you know, any comic book company that's looking at, the amount of just the amount of likes, not even the, you know, they don't know what the readership is, but just the likes that some of these Webtoon comics get. If you're a publisher and you're not looking at this and drooling, then you just don't understand how this works.
Yeah, hell, I'm looking at some of those likes and drooling.
I
want to get 1 million clicks.
I know. Oh my God.
All we need to do is just tell a like teen romance story about two girls and a boy, and we're in like Flint.
Right.
That's going to be Outrage season two.
Outrage and love.
Two teenage girls and an outrage and love.
We may not get there in my lifetime, but I really do feel like digital is the future of the medium, just because it can reach so many more people, and your overhead is so much less. You don't have to pay for printing. You don't have to pay for shipping. So I do think that we are
so much as being the future of the medium. It's the present of society. Like, that's not even like we're already there as far as a society goes. That's how people talk to each other now.
Yep.
So all that Webtoon is just one of the places that's smart enough to say, let's put our comics over here where everybody is already.
Yeah, but
so I mean, I definitely expect to see more of that.
But it sounds like though, maybe you won't agree with this, but it sounds like, and I feel like the digital still doesn't get the kind of the respect that it deserves. Oh, that's just a webcomic. Man, the stories and characters and art are just as good, if not better, than a lot of the stuff that's being printed, in my opinion. What do you guys think?
I think it's a generational thing. I think that, like, I think young people who mostly will be reading, you know, the audience for Webtoon is also really young. And I think that this is just the way that they're used to reading comics. And the older people, the Generation X and millennials who are used to reading print comics are going to keep reading print comics. And they're not, you know, they're just not interested in reading comics in a different format. It's just not what they're used to. It's not how they get their, you know, nostalgia kick or whatever. And so they just don't look at it as the same thing. But the younger people, this is what they're going to know. Like that Spider-Man issue or whatever that got me into comics, for a kid who's 10 years old now, it's probably going to be on Webtoon or something like that. Or maybe not, you know, or just an artist they really like on Instagram or something like that. That's how they're going to be discovering it. And so that's where their nostalgia is going to come from.
Yeah, and there's plenty of digital content from the big publishers too. So, you know, yeah. I mean, the amount of comics that I need to read and review just to put out a daily podcast. I mean, if I didn't go digital, I'd be carrying around 50 books in my bag. It's just not feasible, you know.
Right. Well, that's another good thing about digital. It's you don't have your wife threatening to throw out your digital comic books.
I don't need a long box for my iPad.
That's yeah.
That's right. Well, I did want to ask you some sort of technical questions, switching back to specifically about Outrage, Riley, about the kind of the art. Did you – I mean, it's so interesting to me the way you incorporate like pixels and other digital kind of illustration code we see you're almost forming. Was that like in the DNA, like baked in from early on that you
– Yeah. Yeah. A lot of that is Matt Herm's colorist work. Mm. He's great. And that was one of the things when I was looking for a colorist is I really wanted somebody that I thought would do a great job with those kind of special effects and be able to use the pixels and do all that type of thing. That was one of the main things I was looking for. So that from the very beginning, I thought that would be a cool signature look for the series.
Was it a tough transition going from the traditional comic book page that you were used to working on to the kind of the scrolling vertical strip?
Yeah, I'd done a lot of digital comics for Marvel and other places online. Like I've got my Dash Hudson comic at Ghost Tech that. Is another weekly comic that I do that, but it's shorter. But that uses more of like a Comixology guided view, slideshow type of thing. And I was very used to that. And the vertical scroll, it took a lot more for me to wrap my head around than I thought it would. There was a learning curve there that took me a few chapters to really understand how that works.
Yeah. It's so interesting. You can do so many cool things with it. It's static images, but just the way you scroll in a way, it's almost like a motion comic.
There's an interactive side to it where, because like you're like the speed of how you scroll through it. Like one of the cool tricks I've found is just how many panels do you want to show up on your screen at the same time? And maybe sometimes you want to go two full screen lengths without showing any images. And that creates a cool effect all by itself. And just as you're reading it, that effect of scrolling and there's nothing there creates a cool kind of tension that, and things like that are fun to play around with. Cause then sometimes having a whole bunch of panels within the same screen is a different effect than having just one per screen. Or if there's an image that, like one image that is bigger than the screen size of your phone or your computer or whatever, and you keep scrolling within that image and not seeing the bottom of it for a while, that's another cool effect. So there's a lot of cool stuff to do with that vertical scroll that makes it a lot of fun to play around with.
Now, Fabian, from a scripting standpoint, was it a challenge for you as well to kind of adapt?
Yeah, I'd done a couple of horizontal scrolls and a couple of digital comics for a kids gaming website I worked with, which was actually really different because it was panel to panel movement. and hyperlinks within panels. But the vertical scroll took me a few chapters to really feel comfortable. Riley helped a lot because the more he began to understand the flow on the phone or on the iPad, he was able to space the panels out to, in essence, create the dialogue flow. I mean, the space between panels oftentimes really dictates both how much you can write and how you want to have it flow from one panel to the next, how your balloon trails go. Now, to me, this is everything is so ingrained to do this in a vertical scroll that I don't know how the hell we're going to turn it into a regular format comic. Not in terms of the art, because Riley takes that into account both ways. He's already doing it both for regular comic format and for the vertical scroll at the same time. But I'm not. I'm only through the vertical scroll. So we're going to have to either cut out dialogue or change stuff, or because I don't see how some of this stuff is going to fit into a regular panel, you know? But that, you know, that's a bridge we'll cross to when we get to it, but it was a really, really fun process for me. I always like odd jobs and interesting changes and tweaks to format. I enjoy doing that kind of stuff a lot. I really like tackling it. So once I got the hang of it, I could be wrong, Riley. I think we just got better and better at it as we went along. We figured out how this was working.
Well, we got worse and worse. It just each one is another miserable.
Well, scheduling. From the standpoint of the schedule, Riley's penciling right now while he's talking. That's how tight we are on our deadline. That's another thing. The immediacy and intimacy of this process, as we've gotten toward the end, and our deadlines have gotten more and more horrific. Is like you can script something I've learned on a Tuesday morning and it's live on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
There's no, even the latest comic I was ever worked on in my life, and Lord knows I worked on some light comics, it still took another week or two to get to the printer and get out on the racks.
Yeah, this is it's a thrill. That's
action-packed comic. The last few chapters have been since the holidays, actually, right? Since early December. All these guys, not me. I'm lazy. This is easy for me. These guys are busting their asses. They're killing themselves to get this thing to come out every week. And it stuns me because I'm looking at all the other North American launches they did in November or in the fall, and not a single one of them, I think, went more than like 8 chapters before they took a break. And here we are coming out every single week. Yeah, take a look. Single week we're coming out with our new one, and it's a testament to these guys, because I'm not kidding when I tell you, you know, tonight's chapter is being colored even as we speak. Tomorrow. Today's Monday, right? Yeah.
It's supposed to come out on Wednesday.
Colored as we speak.
It's supposed to come out on Wednesday, and they keep putting it out on Tuesday.
Tuesday night. Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a midnight Eastern Standard Time launch.
I think
supposed to be the new release update. And then somewhere, so at some point, like halfway through, they started releasing it at 9 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday night. I don't know why. And
I think last week was like 8 p.m.
If we don't get it to them till 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night our time, that's still 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock in California, which is where the Webtoon offices are. They can still get it to come out by midnight Eastern time. So I'm not that crazy. And listen, at this point, if we miss a week or we're late by a day, I'm not going to feel guilty, because these guys have killed themselves to get this thing done.
Well, yeah, but we've got what? Three more chapters to go before the end of season one. So I really want to do it. I don't want to miss any. If we could do this whole thing perfect, that'd be great.
I already worked on a weekly comic for DC. I don't feel the driving urge to prove myself.
And some of my digital stuff with Marvel was weekly also, and it does. Weekly schedules are hectic.
they're
monthly hectic. Schedules are hectic enough, but a week, it's like, man, you'll think you're ahead. You could go from feeling like you're really well ahead 1 week to like the next week being desperately behind.
Yeah, so, yeah, and it's the equivalent of about 5 or 6 pages of comic book art. Yeah. Leaning more towards 6 lately than 5. Right? Well, am I?
Yeah.
So you know,
that extra page, man, just to get like a good big panel in there.
It's a chunk of work on a weekly basis, you know.
Yeah.
There aren't very many monthly comic book artists producing 20 to 24 pages a month every month for 6 months straight.
100%. Right. Yeah.
Nowadays, if they go 2 issues,
I know. Yeah. It's like they go 2 full issues, you know.
So any thoughts?
Issue 1, issue 2, guest artist, issue 3.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on a season 2 of Outrage? Have we been kicking that ball around yet?
Yeah, we already had 3 seasons really roughly discussed, not worked out or plotted or anything like that, but we knew what season 2 was going to be pretty much from the very beginning, subject to new ideas changing that, you know. The epilogue of chapter 26 kind of sets that up. Whether we have a second season with Webtoon or not, you know, remains to be seen, because we're in discussions. I can't say negotiations until I see a contract, but we are in discussions. And we prefer to do it with Webtoon. We really would. But you know, it is business. So we got to make sure the business part of it makes sense to us.
So if you're reading it on Webtoon,
If you're reading it on Webtoon,
tell and you
them,
really love it there, write to them, say, hey,
you'd like
you
to see season 2. Just say you'd be real idiots to let these guys get away. Something nice like that.
Gonna get you.
Yeah. It's better if you say it nicely, like, hey, jackasses, don't let these 2 great creators get away.
Hear that, listeners, get out there right now. Check out Outrage and leave comments as appropriate. Well, I don't want to...
Pitchforks and torches are okay, too, all right? It's all right to go old school. It doesn't all have to be digital. You can actually go to Webtoon's offices with pitchforks and torches.
16th century style.
And shout at them. Vats of boiling oil. Sometimes the oldies are the goodies, okay?
Classic, yes, classic. Classic protest. Well, I don't want to keep...
We really shouldn't... I shouldn't joke, because, you know, there's always that one psycho out there who's going to listen to that and go, Fabian, I love Deadpool. Fabian wants me to go light Webtoon's office on fire.
Don't do that.
Don't do that at home, kids.
All right, so one last question for you guys. We've covered a lot of stuff here, and it's been a lot of fun. But for those listeners, I know I have quite a few of them who are aspiring comic creators. Would you recommend Webtoon as a way to go to kind of get your foot in the door, despite the challenges and the differences between web and print?
I think so, and they've got their Discover program is really set up specifically for that. Is that what it is? Is it Discover?
Yep, it's Discover. Okay. Yeah,
Go ahead.
No, you go, Ronnie.
Okay. Well, I was just gonna say, like, it's made. I don't know exactly how it works, but it's made to, you know, you just put your comic up there, and I don't know if it just anyone can do it, or you have to submit to them, or what. But
you submit to them for approval, but you can put it up on Discover once they approve it. And then once they approve it, every week you can reload new content, and they approve it first because they want to make sure that the subject matter is suitable for their platform. I've participated in a few Webtoon panels at conventions now, which is, you know, how to break into Webtoon. And I'm just like the old man, get off my lawn guy on the panel. That's what I'm there for. But there is almost zero doubt in my mind right now that Webtoon presents one of the single best ways available in our industry right now for people to create content and get it out on a platform where eyeballs can see it. It allows you to tell somebody, there's 6 chapters of my work on Webtoon. Here's the URL link. Please give it a look. And it makes it easier for people to have an opportunity to read your work. The other side of it is that many of the people that are on Webtoon's main paid platform started in the Discover program. And they became popular on the Discover program. So Webtoon ended up moving them over to the main site and paying them too for in most cases. So they actually started to earn a living off of what started as almost their ability to just, almost like fan fiction in a way, their ability to tell stories and hope that someone would read them. So I would strongly recommend potential creators who are interested to look into Webtoon's Discover program. All the information is there on the website.
Great. You heard it there. Legendary creator telling you this is your opportunity. No excuse. So definitely get out.
When he calls me legendary kids, he's just saying I'm old. Legendary is a cover. It's a pseudonym for old.
All right, Fabian. Well, I'll give you a chance. Anything else you want to share with listeners, any other work you have, and also let them know where you can be found online if they want to follow along on social media.
Riley, you go first.
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at Riley_Brown. I'm also on Facebook and Tumblr, if anyone still uses that, DeviantArt, whatever. I'm in all sorts of things, but Instagram is probably where I'm the most active.
You can get me on Twitter at Fabian Nicieza, just like it's spelled. And I will be glad to talk to anyone anytime on Twitter. No problem at all. I also do lots of convention appearances per year. I do about 10 shows a year. My first show will be West Palm Beach at the beginning of March. So come on out and say hi and spend some money at my table, because that's always fun. I have no other comic book stuff I'm doing right now other than Outrage, although I'm happy to say that I turned down a Marvel assignment this weekend because it didn't interest me. So that was nice to do. I enjoyed doing that. I'm old, so I'm seriously really working on getting closer to retirement than I am to having a career. Please, if more of you read Outrage, then I can retire sooner, and that would probably be a good thing for the industry.
I should probably mention my upcoming conventions too. I'll be at Big Apple Comic Con in New York City on March 9th and 10th. And then on March 22nd and 24th, I'll be at C2E2. So if you are looking for me, that's where you'll be able to find me.
Great. Well, I want to thank you guys again for joining. It's been a blast. And Outrage is great. I really enjoyed it. And I hope some of our listeners go and check it out. And if
thank you very much. And we hope so, too.
Yeah. And thanks so much. Yeah. And we totally appreciate you doing this Webtoon Wednesdays thing, because there's so many great web comics out there. It's great to see somebody shining a light on them, because there's people reading them, but nobody knows about them somehow.
Definitely not enough people talking about them. So hopefully we're going to remedy that.
Yeah, and I think in honor of the passing of Stan Lee, it's wonderful that you chose Wednesday as the day to spotlight Webtoon, just so that you could have the alliteration in there. That's exactly really good.
That's exactly right.
Webtoon Tuesday, Stan wouldn't have liked that as much.
Exactly why I chose it. So listeners, if you want to follow Riley or Fabian, just go down to the show notes, take a look there. I'll have links to their social media there. And again, thanks guys for joining, and good luck with Outrage. Can't wait to see how it all ends, season one.
Thank you. Look forward to it. Let us know what you think when you read the last chapter.
Definitely. Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.